Real quick, we have to take a break to acknowledge the sponsor of today's episode, which is Secret Nature. Secret Nature's ultra premium CBD gummies are crafted with real botanicals, nothing extra, and designed to fit right into your day with clean, purposeful functionality. So for me personally, I like to take one of their snoozer gummies in the evening to unwind and ensure that I get a good night's sleep. After a long day, especially when my brain is just still running a mile a minute and I can't seem to settle down, I'll take one to help me slow down, unplug, and actually get a good night's sleep. I personally don't drink alcohol because I just don't like the way it makes me feel the next day, but these gummies feel very clean, intentional, and it never leaves me groggy the next morning, just feeling balanced and rested. Secret Nature's gummies are organic and farm grown. They're never lab made. They're ultra premium CBD gummies made with real botanicals and nothing extra. You've got two purpose built options. There's Bliss for clear focus and productive flow if you want to take one during the day, and then you get Snoozers to help you relax and rest at the end of the day. Each gummy has consistent, measured CBD, so there's never any guessing, just clean, reliable functionality that fits naturally into your schedule. Get 30% off your first order at secretnature.com with the code MAMA. That's M-A-M-A. And just a heads up, their Black Friday sale is coming up, and they are going to be offering 25% off on orders of $75 or more, 35% off on orders of $125 or more, and then 40% off on orders of $150 or more between November 26th and the 30th. So don't forget to use my code MAMA when you check out. That's M-A-M-A at secretnature.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit progressive.com to see what you can save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Summer's here, and Nordstrom has everything you need for your best dress season ever. From beach days and weddings to weekend getaways and your everyday wardrobe. Discover stylish options under $100 from tons of your favorite brands like Mango, Skims, Princess Polly, and Madewell. It's easy, too, with free shipping and free returns, in-store order pickup, and more. Shop today in stores, online at Nordstrom.com, or download the Nordstrom app.
With a Venmo debit card, you can Venmo more than just your friends. You can use your balance in so many ways. You can Venmo everything. Need gas? You can Venmo this. How about snacks? You can Venmo that. Your favorite band's merch? You can Venmo this. Or their next show? You can Venmo that. Visit Venmo.me/debit to learn more.
You can Venmo this, or you can Venmo that. You can Venmo this, or you can Venmo that.
The Venmo MasterCard is issued by the Bancorp Bank N.A. pursuant to license by MasterCard International Incorporated. Card may be used everywhere MasterCard is accepted. Venmo purchase restrictions apply.
Welcome back to Mama Mystery. I am your host, Kelly, and thank you so much for joining me for part two of the Blake Lively and Justin Baldoni drama. If you have not listened to part one, go back and listen to that first and then join us for this one. So much has happened since that last episode, namely the Chiefs losing. So at the end of that last episode, I said, go Chiefs. So I am a Kansas City native, and I was pretty ashamed by that Super Bowl appearance. I don't even know what that was. So we're not going to talk about it. But so much has happened since then, even within the Blake Lively and Justin Baldoni stuff, with Taylor Swift's involvement and Colleen Hoover's involvement. And then Candace Owens is getting in on it. And if you're on TikTok, the guy who has Be Better, he always does these like really good deep dives from a marketing perspective. He has been touching on this. Everyone's talking about it. So I feel like this is one of those stories that just keeps evolving. There's even stuff that's happened. I mean, the SNL 50th anniversary was, I believe, over the weekend, and Blake and Ryan were there, and they had this like awkward interaction. I don't know. We're gonna talk about all of it. I'm gonna try my best not to leave anything out, but if I do, please go to mamamystery.com and let me know in that message box. You don't have to do anything crazy. You don't have to fill out an account. You don't have to leave a bunch of information. You can literally write me a message as if you're sending me a text, and I will get it. So yeah, let me know what you think of this episode and if there's anything I forgot. And without further ado, let's dive in. When
the Blake Lively versus Justin Baldoni controversy first made headlines, it seemed like this behind-the-scenes Hollywood power struggle over creative control. But as more details emerged, it became clear that this wasn't just about a movie. This was a full-scale industry battle with power players like Ryan Reynolds, Taylor Swift, and even Sony executives caught in the mix. Now, new information suggests that this entire scandal was more than just a legal fight. It was a coordinated media and industry power move. And at the center of it all, Ryan Reynolds' aggressive PR strategy, Taylor Swift's alleged involvement in pressuring Justin Baldoni, and a last-minute push to erase Justin's influence from the film that he spent years developing. So let's break down everything that happened behind the scenes, the manipulations, the power plays, and then the sudden lifeboat escape of Taylor Swift. And then at the end, we're going to talk about what I firmly believe is the real motive behind this entire thing. So let's start with Colleen Hoover's role in the controversy. So Colleen Hoover is obviously the author of It Ends With Us, and she initially stood by Justin Baldoni when he secured the rights to adapt her best-selling novel. In 2019, Justin personally reached out to Colleen, expressing his deep understanding of the book's themes and his commitment to portraying domestic violence authentically. And at the time, Colleen seemed really aligned with Justin's vision, responding, saying, quote, "You get the book, and that's the most important thing to me. My big fear is that I'll option it to someone who thinks it's just a hot romance, and they'll take it in the absolute wrong direction," end quote. However, as production progressed and tensions between Justin and Blake escalated, Colleen's loyalty appeared to shift. And according to insiders, Colleen was initially concerned about the film's direction when Blake began pushing for script rewrites that kind of softened the book's darker themes. So reports suggest that Colleen was privately frustrated but hesitant to publicly oppose Blake, given Blake's influence and Hollywood stature. And obviously, we've seen just what Blake and her team, including Ryan, is capable of. And so it might seem smart, even though it seems disingenuous, for Colleen to kind of separate herself, but you can probably understand why she would, even if you don't agree with it. But by mid-2024, it became clear that Colleen had chosen to align herself completely with Blake Lively. And the turning point came when Colleen attended Book Bonanza, which is her annual fan convention, where it was expected that Justin would present to promote the film. Instead, Colleen abruptly rescinded Justin Baldoni's invitation and replaced him with Blake Lively, which was a move widely interpreted as a strategic distancing from Justin Baldoni. And sources close to the event reported that Colleen and Blake presented as this united front, avoiding any mention of Justin's name while they were heavily promoting Blake Lively's version of the film. Now, I actually have talked, I don't know if I talked about this in the last episode or in the TikToks that I've made about this or the videos I've made about this, but Blake literally showed up to Book Bonanza with her own version of It Ends With Us, like her own edited copy. Because I think we talked in the last episode about how she kind of weaseled her way into the editing room and kind of just performed all of her own edits and then brought that version to Book Bonanza. And then against the recommendations or orders from Sony executives, said that she was going to show them not even just a clip, but the entire film for everyone that attended Book Bonanza. So this is like thousands of people who are huge Colleen Hoover fans and fans of the book. And she showed them this version of the film. And she even joked about how she was told not to, but that she was like, well, I brought it with me in a file on the plane, so they can't stop me, basically. And I want you to really think about how Justin Baldoni, who I believe was actually hospitalized at the time with a severe infection in his back, because we know that he's been dealing with chronic back pain and issues. But he had been hospitalized for, I believe it was like an infection in his spine or something that left him in the hospital for 6 days. While he was hospitalized, he found out that he was not going to be invited to Book Bonanza anymore, that his invitation was rescinded, and that Blake was going instead, and that she was going to show her version of the film. And Justin Baldoni, the director of this film, just kind of had to be like, okay. I mean, what could he even do at that point? Like, she's already out of control. But I want you to imagine Justin's position, having worked on this film since 2019, 5 years, this culmination of work and energy and effort and passion put into this project, for it just to be completely railroaded by Blake Lively. And then the absolute slap in the face, salt on the wound move of taking over his appearance at Book Bonanza and being like, and we're going to show our version of the film. So now when all these people see the other version or whatever ends up being published, they will have at least seen mine first. If that isn't the most narcissistic, power, control-hungry move I've ever seen, I don't know what is. But this just truly speaks to her character. And by her, I mean Blake's. But Colleen Hoover's shift became even more apparent when she allegedly assured the Sony executives that she would refuse to promote the film unless Blake Lively's cut was chosen over Baldoni's. And this was obviously a significant blow to Justin Baldoni, as Colleen's endorsement was considered a key factor in securing fan support for the adaptation. Now, furthermore, leaked internal emails revealed that Colleen was involved in pressuring Sony to exclude Justin from key marketing efforts, ensuring that Blake Lively's version of the film would be the definitive one presented to audiences. Now, I want to know what your thoughts are on this. Do you think that Colleen was motivated by pressure from Blake Lively and her team? Or do you think that she was motivated by greed because she wanted to see the film do well and knew that the only way to see success with the film was to follow along with what Blake and Ryan were doing because they were essentially higher up on the totem pole of Hollywood? But I also want to point out that all of the uproar and backlash that has been received regarding Blake and Justin and their drama happened after all of this happened, right? So I think when they were doing all of this, they expected it to all work in their favor. Now that there's been this big backlash and it didn't go the way they want, then Colleen deactivated her Instagram, and then she just, I think last week, reactivated her Instagram but had deleted any posts that included Justin or Blake from her feed. So now when you go to her Instagram feed, there is nothing about Blake or Justin. Is that because she has seen the backlash and doesn't want to be a part of it anymore? Is it because she knows that the trial is impending and so she doesn't want to have any information out there that could be detrimental to the case on either side? Obviously, the cynical part of my brain, you know, tends to lead towards Occam's razor. Like, whatever makes the most sense is probably true. And I can't help but believe that Colleen probably thought that by choosing Blake and Ryan's side, it would bode well for her in the future. And then when it all started blowing up and she realized that she had made a mistake, rather than go back and own that mistake, she just, you know, removed herself from the story entirely. But you can't do that because you were the one that wrote this book. You are a very big, heavy player in this. So either you need to acknowledge what is going on or, I don't know, say goodbye to your entire career, I guess. Because at this point, if you don't address it, you're going to let everyone else create the narrative. And they're kind of leaning towards Colleen. You are inauthentic and you're disloyal and you really screwed Justin over. So anyway, okay, let's move on to the next point, which is Taylor Swift's alleged influence on the film. Now, Blake Lively's now infamous Dragons text to Justin Baldoni was more than just a quirky metaphor. That text was a direct reference to the two most powerful figures that she relied on to push her own agenda, which were Ryan Reynolds and Taylor Swift. Now, Blake's text to Baldoni read, and I'm going to reread it because it's just so fun to read. It says, quote, "If you ever get around to watching Game of Thrones, you'll appreciate that I'm Khaleesi, and like her, I happen to have a few dragons. For better or worse, but usually for the better. Because my dragons also protect those I fight for. So really, we all benefit from those gorgeous monsters of mine. You will too, I can promise you," end quote. It's so freaking corny. Like, I cringe just reading it. I cannot believe she actually typed that out and sent it. And I can't even imagine being Taylor Swift and being associated with that. I would be so embarrassed. But this was not just pretend poetic language. It was this open admission that she was leveraging Ryan and Taylor to pressure Justin Baldoni into making creative changes that he did not want. And this, of course, references the New York City meeting in Blake and Ryan's apartment when Taylor happens to walk in during their meeting with Justin. Remember, during this crucial meeting at Blake and Ryan's apartment in New York City, Taylor openly praised Blake's suggested script changes, which Justin Baldoni had initially opposed. And her presence in the meeting, according to Justin's lawsuit, was intended as an intimidation tactic, as if her approval of the revisions would force him into compliance. Now, Taylor Swift's team never outright denied this claim. Instead, when the media reported on the issue, her PR team carefully phrased their statements, suggesting that Swift had been used by Blake rather than refuting the idea that she actively participated in pressuring Justin. And some articles suggested that Taylor walked in not expecting Justin to be there. But then you'd have to ask yourself, how did Taylor even end up with the context to speak on the meeting if she didn't have access to the script or know what Blake was trying to accomplish? So did Taylor read Blake's version beforehand? Like, wouldn't she have had to even be able to speak on it? And did Taylor know Justin was pushing back? Because if not, then how else would she even have knowledge to speak on the topic if she truly just walked in not knowing Justin would be there? Like, you have to ask these questions and not just believe what you're being told by the media, right? As Justin's lawsuit gained traction, Taylor Swift's PR team orchestrated this strategic pivot, leaking a Daily Mail article that claimed Taylor Swift was distancing herself from Blake. And the article framed Taylor as someone who felt used by Blake and suggested that she wanted to take a step back from their friendship. And the timing of this article raised eyebrows because it coincided with the subpoenas of legal documents and Justin Baldoni's legal team preparing for discovery. Given Taylor Swift's well-documented history of influencing media narratives, it wasn't long before people started questioning whether she also had a role in the New York Times article that eventually smeared Justin Baldoni. So you'll remember the New York Times published this scathing article that painted Justin Baldoni as problematic and inappropriate while he was on set with Blake. And many media insiders questioned how Blake and Ryan had enough industry sway to convince a prestigious outlet like the New York Times to run such a damning piece. So Justin Baldoni's lawsuit asserts that the article was carefully coordinated over several months and suggests that Taylor Swift's extensive media influence may have played a role in its release. Well, how, do you ask? Well, Taylor Swift has a long-standing and powerful relationship with not only the New York Times, but other major media outlets as well. So if she wanted to push a narrative, she could have used her influence to ensure that the story was taken seriously and given prominence. I'm not saying that's what she did, but it's easy to believe that. Given Swift's reputation for supporting women and advocating for victims, her subtle endorsement of Blake Lively's side could have added credibility to the allegations against Justin Baldoni. And if she privately supported Blake's version of events to journalists or industry insiders, it might have encouraged them to move forward with the piece. If Taylor Swift had a hand in the article, she might have worked with PR strategists to ensure that the messaging aligned with a broader feminist or social justice narrative, making it more difficult for Justin to counter publicly. But if Taylor Swift does get subpoenaed, she would likely be asked whether she communicated with the New York Times regarding the article, whether she played a role in framing the narrative against Justin Baldoni, and whether she had prior knowledge of Blake's alleged plan to use the media as a weapon in the dispute. Now, whether or not Taylor Swift is being deposed or if there's any discovery that's going to leak any kind of text messages or emails between Taylor Swift or her team and Blake's team, that all remains to be seen. But holy shit, can you imagine? That would be insane. I cannot think of a similar story where such a powerhouse like Taylor Swift would actually get deposed for a legal drama such as this. So if that does happen, you can bet that we're going to be talking about it because that would just set such a precedence moving forward. But now let's address the composer shakeup and if Taylor Swift was behind it. So late in the production of It Ends With Us, an unexpected shakeup occurred when the film's original composer was suddenly fired and replaced with Rob Simonson, who had previously worked on Deadpool 3, which you probably know is a film connected to Ryan Reynolds.
My day kicks off with a refreshing Celsius energy drink, then straight to the gym. Pre-K pickup, back home to meal prep. Time for my fire station shift. One more Celsius, gotta keep the lights on. When the 3-alarm hits, I'm ready. Celsius. Live. Fit. Go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
It's summer. Time to enjoy long days, lazy nights, and great food. Because Uber Eats has deals all summer long. So, when hunger strikes, don't sweat it. Delicious deals are just a tap away on Uber Eats. Enjoy all your favorite grocery items delivered straight to you. Get ice cream, soda, and snacks from your favorite stores like Wegmans and CVS and make the most of every moment. Now that sounds like a good summer. Order now on Uber Eats. Terms apply. Product availability varies by region. See app for details.
This episode is brought to you by TikTok. Summer tastes like TikTok. Tantalize your taste buds this sunny season with citrus adventure and orange. Two everyday flavors that bring summer in every... TikTok Citrus Adventure is a yummy, vibrant medley of lemon, lime, and mandarin. And TikTok Orange is the perfect mix of tangy and sweet. Visit us at TikTok USA on social to refresh your summer with TikTok.
Now, this change was unusual, as composers are typically locked in early in a film's development, and it typically takes months to compose for a movie of this magnitude. Now, a leaked rumor suggested that Taylor Swift had taken issue with the original composer due to a personal grudge, and the specifics of their disagreement still remain unclear, but sources allege that Taylor Swift was dissatisfied with the composer's past work or his connections to individuals that she no longer associates with. So, allegedly, for educational purposes only, she presented Sony with an ultimatum: either keep her song, My Tears Ricochet, in the movie, or retain the original composer, but not both. In the end, Sony chose to fire the composer and keep Taylor Swift's song, further cementing her influence over production decisions. And I think it's interesting how Blake kind of took a page out of Taylor's book and said that if they didn't, I believe this is what happened. I'm speaking off script here, but I believe when she confronted Jamie Heath and Justin Baldoni, asking them to write a letter of recommendation so that she could get the PGA, you know, Producers Guild of America tag on the last of her name, so that she would get producer credits, that she leveraged using Taylor Swift's song if they weren't going to write the letter. I believe she said something along the lines of, if you guys don't, you know, work with me on this, then I'll have to reconsider using Taylor Swift's song and using my relationship with Taylor to get the song, right? So we're seeing both of them kind of use their power, allegedly. I have to keep saying that or else I'm probably going to end up deposed myself. So let's move on to the next point, which is the Reddit leak that predicted everything. So in August of 2024, and you'll remember, this is when the movie was released. I believe it was released on August 8th or 9th. But in August of 2024, an anonymous Reddit post surfaced detailing insider knowledge about the battle over It Ends With Us. And the post claimed that Blake had threatened Sony, stating that she would take false allegations about Justin Baldoni to the New York Times if they refused to give her control over the film's final cut. Additionally, the post alleged that Taylor Swift was involved in lobbying for a separate version of the film to be created, further cementing her behind-the-scenes influence. Now, the post, initially dismissed as speculation, gained credibility as events unfolded because many of the details it predicted turned out to be true. For instance, it accurately described the escalating tension between Justin and Blake, the internal struggles over the film's editing process, and the strategic media attacks against Justin Baldoni. And it also predicted the involvement of high-profile figures like Ryan Reynolds and Taylor Swift, highlighting how their roles in the dispute would become public knowledge. And another aspect that aligned with reality was the claim that Blake and Ryan were preparing to leverage their media connections to shape the public narrative. Months later, the New York Times published its hit piece on Justin Baldoni, a move that fit exactly within the timeline and methods described in the Reddit leak. Now, this has led many to believe that the anonymous source was someone with direct knowledge of production meetings and internal studio discussions. Now, the last thing I'll say regarding Taylor Swift's involvement in this is that I do think it's interesting how last year, I believe it was last year, the Super Bowl, Taylor Swift brought Blake. And they had all those chummy pictures where Blake is in the, you know, red sports suit and the big curly hair. And it was beautiful. But, I mean, it was very clear that they were, like, besties and they were at the Super Bowl. And so some people were like, if they are still friends and things are still fine, will Blake attend this year's Super Bowl with Taylor? Well, spoiler alert, she didn't, which a lot of people did notice. And they haven't been seen out together since all of this came out. And so it's no coincidence that Taylor Swift abruptly cut ties with Blake, or at least that's what it appears like, right as the public began turning against her. And Taylor Swift's damage control strategy was clear: publicly claim that she had never been involved, shift the blame onto Blake, and then quietly exit the narrative before legal action could touch her. But I think it's too late for all of that now. It's obvious that she has been involved to some extent. even if it was just the meeting in New York City. I mean, all of the other stuff, like her involvement with the composer and the threats to, you know, not allow My Tears Ricochet to be involved, that's all just kind of rumor and speculation. But we do know for a fact that she was part of the meeting that took place in the apartment. So whether or not that's going to be enough to actually depose her or have her subpoenaed for this trial remains to be seen. But I guess we'll see. Now let's get into Ryan Reynolds and his hostility towards Justin Baldoni. So Ryan Reynolds' involvement in this entire saga extended far beyond simply supporting his wife. He actively worked behind the scenes to not only undermine Justin Baldoni's credibility, but he also allegedly referred to him as a deranged predator in private conversations with Hollywood executives. Ryan Reynolds used his production company, Maximum Effort, to also further control the narrative, overseeing marketing content for the movie and ensuring that Justin Baldoni was sidelined in promotional materials. So you'll remember, I don't know if I talked about this in the last episode, but it was Maximum Effort, Ryan's production company, that put together these content production scenes where the entire cast, sans Justin, of course, would be together arranging flower arrangements and ironing patches onto jeans and baking cookies together. And everything was just all flowery, and it was all meant to promote this movie. There was never talk about domestic violence or what the real purpose of the message of the film was supposed to be. But that, of course, makes sense when you consider the fact that it was Maximum Effort and Ryan Reynolds' influence over the marketing for the film. But one of the more blatant instances of Ryan Reynolds' interference came in the form of an Easter egg. And I know a lot of Swifties love the Easter eggs, but obviously Ryan took a page out of her book as well, putting an Easter egg in his highly anticipated Deadpool 3 film, where he allegedly mocked Justin Baldoni by naming a minor character Nice Pool, which was a subtle but pointed jab that fans quickly connected to Justin Baldoni's production company, Wayfarer Studios. So here is a clip from the movie where Nice Pool introduces himself to Deadpool and Wolverine, and he's sporting this long hair and a man bun. It's painfully obvious that this is all a very petty jab at Justin. Take a listen.
Sorry about that. Come here, girl.
Who are you? Oh, I'm Deadpool.
And I guess you're Deadpool too.
But in here, everybody calls me Nice Pool. Oh my goodness, wait till you see Lady Pool. She is gorgeous. She just had a baby too, and can't even tell.
I don't think you're supposed to say that.
That's okay. I identify as a feminist.
Right.
Are those gold-plated 50 caliber Desert Eagle pistoleros?
Of course.
To match my ear huggy.
Can I have them?
Over my dead body. You're fun. And I guess you've already met Mary Poppins, a.k.a. Dogpool. Careful where you put your hand. She's 90% G-spot, and she'll let you know it.
You let this little flirt out of your sight for 1 second, and she starts shopping for a new papa. If you can't be a responsible pet owner, then maybe you don't deserve this little unicorn.
Guilty on all charges, Your Honor. It shan't happen again.
Why are you so nice? It costs nothing to be kind.
Shutting the fuck up is also free.
Caliente.
Now, a lot of people who watched Deadpool 3 saw that clip and they were confused why Nice Pool was even a thing. Like, why that? The character just didn't really make sense. And a lot of people said that when they watched it, that character kind of seemed like he came out of nowhere. And then he was put in a later scene where he essentially gets his head blown off. And it's almost kind of mirroring The Office. If you watch The Office, you'll appreciate this. But Michael Scott has, you know, this film that he's been working on forever called Threat Level Midnight. And when they finally do produce this film and record it, they show it. It's Threat Level Midnight. It's like a whole episode is dedicated to it. Michael Scott has this grudge against Toby Flenderson, okay? And that's known throughout the entire series. But in Threat Level Midnight, Toby's character gets his head blown off, and it seemed like there was no real reason for it. There was no like narrative that supported that needing to happen. And Michael admits that he just did it because he felt like it was an integral part of the film and that it was the most expensive shot that they had. I mean, they had it from like multiple different angles. It literally, all it did was showcase Michael's level of pettiness. And I feel like that's exactly what is happening here. Ryan Reynolds is just displaying how low he can go in the world of petty. And this fueled speculation that Ryan Reynolds was deliberately using his massive platform to diminish Justin Baldoni's reputation, both in Hollywood and among audiences. And then adding another layer to the controversy, Ryan Reynolds was also accused of operating under his online alter ego, Gordon Reynolds, which is a pseudonym that he used in the past for behind-the-scenes dealings and then possible social media manipulation. And industry insiders believe that this alter ego was used to shape public perception and subtly influence online discourse about Justin Baldoni, ensuring that the narrative always remained in Blake and Ryan's favor. And I would also like to point out that in this, the credits of It Ends With Us at the bottom with special thanks, there's two sections where Blake gives her special thanks and Justin gives his special thanks. Listed in special thanks is the name Gordon Reynolds. And when you consider everything you've learned so far and the fact that Ryan Reynolds reportedly pressured Sony to remove Justin from all promotional efforts surrounding the film, ensuring that he would not be included in major industry events, he also reached out to Justin Baldoni's personal agent at WME, allegedly pushing for Justin Baldoni to be blacklisted, effectively attempting to limit his future opportunities within the industry. It's no surprise that, of course, he's going to be thanked in the credits of this film. He had a very heavy hand in a lot of it. But the most explosive incident that Ryan was directly involved with occurred when Justin Baldoni asked about Blake's weight for that lifting scene in the film. Now, this is a standard inquiry meant to ensure safety during stunts. But according to sources close to production, Ryan Reynolds responded furiously, cursing at Justin in front of multiple people, reportedly saying, "How dare you even ask that? This is beyond inappropriate." And witnesses described the confrontation as tense, with Ryan Reynolds refusing to acknowledge that the inquiry was made for practical stunt coordination rather than body shaming. But of course, that wouldn't work with their narrative if they accepted that to be true. So of course, Ryan and Blake blew it up into something much bigger and accused Justin of body shaming her. And then in an internal email exchange obtained by the Hollywood Reporter, a Sony executive later acknowledged that Justin's question had been mischaracterized. The executive wrote, quote, "Justin was asking a routine question to ensure safety for both himself and Blake. This is not an uncommon practice for actors performing physical stunts," end quote. However, Ryan continued to push the narrative that Justin's comments were inappropriate, using the moment to further isolate him from production decisions. And then you see it not so subtly referenced in Deadpool when he mentioned Lady Pool's body. And then, of course, the intimacy coordinator later on, I think there was like a quote from Deadpool where Nice Pool's like, "Where's the intimacy coordinator?" And it's all in reference to It Ends With Us and Justin Baldoni. And if you've seen It Ends With Us, you might be asking yourself, what are you even talking about, Kelly? There is no lifting scene. Well, the situation escalated further when Ryan reportedly insisted that the entire lifting scene just be removed from the film. And so when Sony executives pushed back, arguing that the moment was significant to the story, Ryan allegedly threatened to withdraw his support for the film's marketing unless his demand was met. So as a result, significant reshoots had to be arranged to accommodate his demands, further delaying production and escalating tensions between Ryan Reynolds and Justin Baldoni. As the film's release drew closer, the battle between Justin Baldoni and Blake Lively really reached its peak. Blake refused to promote the film unless her version of the final cut was used, even threatening to enlist Colleen Hoover in her campaign to force Sony's hand. However, after a test screening proved that Justin Baldoni's version of the film resonated more strongly with audiences, the studio ultimately sided with him. And in the end, the aggressive PR strategies employed by Ryan Reynolds and Taylor Swift and Blake only brought more attention to Lively's questionable claims. And Taylor Swift's sudden decision to distance herself from Blake made it clear that she was kind of trying to shield herself from legal repercussions, while Ryan Reynolds' hostile tactics led industry executives to view him as overly controlling. So if you look at this in the big picture, it really blew up in their faces and completely backfired. And I also want you to ask yourself that if Blake was telling the truth, don't you think that Taylor would have been a more vocal supporter of her and this whole narrative? I mean, she has to see what's going on behind the scenes. She has to see that people are turning on her quote unquote best friend. And I can't imagine as a best friend just sitting there silently and idly letting my best friends take all the heat for something that I believed to be true. Right. So I just think it's important to keep that in mind. Now, the lawsuits are still ongoing, but one thing is for certain. This is more than just a simple Hollywood dispute. It is It's a battle of egos and power and carefully orchestrated media manipulation. Now, lastly, let's get into my final thoughts, which is what I believe the hidden motive is behind this entire ordeal, which is securing the rights to It Starts With Us. One of the most shocking theories to emerge from this controversy is that Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds orchestrated the takedown of Justin Baldoni in order to gain control of the film rights to It Starts With Us, which is the sequel to It Ends With Us. I guess it's actually technically the prequel, but I think it came out after It Ends With Us. But anyway, Justin Baldoni had secured the rights to the first film in 2019, meaning that he had first dibs on adapting the sequel. However, if Justin Baldoni were to be removed from the project under scandalous circumstances, then it could force Sony and Colleen Hoover to renegotiate the rights, potentially allowing Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds to take over the franchise. Now, insiders have speculated that the only way to force Justin Baldoni to relinquish his control was to accuse him of something serious, such as workplace misconduct or sexual harassment. This theory aligns with the calculated nature of the smear campaign against him, which involved multiple media outlets, strategic legal action, and a well-orchestrated PR offensive led by Reynolds, Blake Lively, and their allies like Taylor Swift. Now, industry sources suggest that Colleen Hoover, recognizing the potential financial benefits of having Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds attached to the sequel, may have been persuaded to back the effort to oust Justin Baldoni, given the way that she quickly distanced herself from him and then aligned with Blake Lively. Many believe that she was aware or at least complicit in the effort to wrestle away control of the franchise. Now, while this theory remains speculative, the pattern of events strongly suggests that Justin Baldoni's removal was not just about creative differences or about anything that happened on set. It was about power, control, and securing a multi-million dollar franchise. And if that is true, it reveals the lengths to which Hollywood power players will go to protect their interests, even at the cost of a colleague's reputation and career. Now, before I end and wrap up today's episode, I do want to point out that the SNL 50 season anniversary was over the weekend, and Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively were in attendance. And there was this awkward moment where Ryan Reynolds stands up, and obviously this is like a scripted monologue, but he's asked a question as he's sitting in the audience with Blake. And they're like, "Hey, Ryan, how's things going?" And Ryan's like, "They're good. Why? What have you heard?" And then Blake looks up at him like, "Oh my gosh, what? Is there drama?" And I just think that that is such a immature and irresponsible way to react to what is going on. Because not only is it offensive to actual victims of domestic violence to kind of downplay this entire thing, which is what I think they're doing when they do things like that, but it also, in my opinion, impacts the credibility they have in their story. Because if these things really did happen, if she really was hurt by Justin Baldoni, why are they making jokes about it? Why are they taking it so lightly? I just think that was a poor decision. Where is your PR team telling you to just sit down and be quiet and not address it, not make any jokes, don't draw attention to it, don't make light of the situation? Because when you make light of the situation, it's not only insulting to actual victims, but like I said, it really kind of wrecks your credibility, in my opinion. But let me know what your thoughts are about today's episode. Like I said, you can go to mamamystery.com to write me a message. If there is anything that I've forgotten, and there probably is because this story is ever evolving, you can write me a message there. And for my sign off, I have my daughter, Kennedy, who is a big Swiftie. You can say hello.
Hello.
And she has not heard any of this episode, so this is not going to sway her Swiftie loyalty in any direction. But she just really wanted to be a part on signing off. So Kennedy, Daddy typically at the end of the episode goes, "Mama, mystery, out." Okay? Mm-hmm. But I'm going to let you do it, okay? So whenever you're ready.
Mama, Mystery out.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things that people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Visit progressive.com to see what you can save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Ever wonder why people join cults? Discover the secrets at The Psychology of Cults, a mind-bending talk in Charleston, West Virginia, on October 14th. Explore how manipulation works and how to protect yourself from their control and psychological manipulation. Tickets are going fast. Visit theclaycenter.org now. Don't miss this fascinating night of insight and intrigue.
If you're a lineman in charge of keeping the lights on, Grainger understands that you go to great lengths, and sometimes heights, to ensure the power is always flowing, which is why you can count on Grainger for professional-grade products and next-day delivery, so you have everything you need to get the job done. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.